Let the story I'm about to tell you be a lesson for you. Choose your friends carefully, because sometimes the people you think are your friends are the very monsters we're afraid of. I know that sounds kind of cliche, but honestly, it's true. This is an absolutely crazy story, and I'm still in awe of how certain individuals can act. A little more than a year ago, I moved to a new town. I'm a city girl, but was happy to start a new life in this town. I don't want to say that this is a country town, but it's a fraction of the size of the place where I grew up. I spent the first few months just keeping to myself and learning the day-to-day operation and how it works at my new job. On weekends, I would just sort of listen and see what everyone was up to. A couple of weeks into the job, I finally got invited out by one of the girls I worked with. I'll be honest, this was a lot like high school. This was the girl that I wanted to hang out with. She was the popular girl at our job, and all the guys liked her, and the girls wanted to hang out with her. Yes, we were adults, and this mindset still applies. We went to some local bar that Friday night after work. I wasn't drinking much since I didn't want to make a fool of myself with my potential new friends. It didn't take long for me to realize exactly the kind of person she was. For the purpose of the story, I'll refer to her as Marissa. She was getting that wild level of intoxicated, and it was uncomfortable. I laughed along and just hoped the night would end soon. I made sure all the girls got an Uber home, and I finally headed off myself at around 2 in the morning. I was exhausted that night and clearly underestimated these girls. When I woke up in the morning, I had forgotten about a lot of the nonsense from the night before and just remembered the good times. I was happy to have friends and not be alone, and that thought alone blinded me from the reality of who Marissa really was. The next night, we all hung out again, and the night was a copy of the previous nights. Nothing noteworthy other than Marissa being out of control again. That week at work, all week long, Marissa was constantly saying how she couldn't wait to get out again this weekend and that she loved hanging out with me. I was actually flattered and was ready to do it again this upcoming Friday. Friday came, and this time she was beyond intoxicated. She had become mean, even to her friends and the other girls we work with. They all left and, in so many words, basically said, "Forget this chick." I was paraphrasing there since I don't want to write what the girls actually said, and before I knew it, it was just me and Marissa at the bar, and she was barely coherent. I got her home and stayed on her couch to make sure that she was all right. When I woke up in the morning, she was already awake and cleaning her kitchen. She thanked me for the previous night and invited me to a party later in the evening. I knew I didn't have plans, so I of course accepted the invitation. She told me to pick her up at around 10 that night and that she would direct me to the party. She had me excited about the party before we even left the house, and she told me it was going to be an epic party at her friend's barn. Massive bonfire, some food, drinks, dancing, and much better company than we would have at a local bar. I was so excited that I was basically singing in the car. Well, that excitement started to dwindle when I realized how long we'd be driving. It was after 11 and we still weren't there. If I knew I was going to have to drive an hour to some party, I would have declined, but Marissa was pumped and I really wanted her to like me. She finally had me pull over, and sketchy is the only word I can think of to describe the situation. There was nothing in sight at all. No streetlights, no signs, no houses, and most notably, no party. I asked her what was going on, and she says, "You're gonna love this." It was so dark when we pulled up, I didn't even realize that there was a small barn on the side of the road. I could see the beam from a small flashlight shining through the doors. Marissa told me that the party was over there and we needed to hurry up, which made no sense. Why would we need to hurry up? While we were briskly walking over towards this barn, I noticed that Marissa was wearing jeans and the person who was waving the flashlight seemed to be dressed in all black. Yet here I am, wearing some cute dress and I got full makeup on. When I was almost at the barn door, I noticed that Marissa seemed to have fallen back. She was walking about a foot behind me for some reason. The guy with the light opened the door and inside, I still can't believe what I saw. It was one of Marissa's friends from the bar, the one that said not so nice things to her. She was sitting unconscious in a chair. I immediately freaked out and demanded to know what was going on, and Marissa replies, "She disrespected me, and now she's paying for it." I was stunned by the completely unhinged nature of her. I knew at this point that she was a wild party girl, but I didn't think that she was capable of whatever this was. I didn't want to know why I was there, and I didn't give her the option to tell me. Thinking as quickly as I could, I just kicked some dirt in the guy's face who was holding the light, and I just grabbed the unconscious girl. I wasn't worried about Marissa stopping me because I was nearly double her size. I hoisted her up, running to my car, and basically threw the girl in my back seat and sped off. While I was driving, I was fortunate enough to get some service, and even though, like I said, there was nothing anywhere close to us, I was able to call the police and told them that I had an unconscious woman in my back seat. I told them about Marissa and that she was with a guy. Thankfully, not long into the drive, the girl started to move and groan, and then she started to talk. I pulled over and explained what had happened, and she started crying. She said that the guy was some guy that she had been seeing for a little bit, and he was taking her to a party at a barn. When she got there, Marissa was there and hit her with some sort of heavy object across the face, and whatever it was knocked her out for a while. We finally linked up with the cops, and Marissa's former friend was taken to the hospital and treated for a minor concussion, and thankfully that was all. Later that evening, they found Marissa at her house, and she was completely surprised as to why she was getting arrested. She claimed to have had done nothing wrong, and the events that just transpired were just a prank. They never did catch the guy, and since he had been using a fake name and a fake cell phone number, and Marissa refused to turn him in. From what I understand, she still claims that this was just some sort of prank, and now she's locked up under false pretenses, under her word. I can't remember exactly what they did charge her with, but I know she got in trouble for assaulting her with a weapon and kidnapping, so obviously her future doesn't look too bright. This is truly insane to be a part of, and I hope at least one person can learn from my mistakes. This is a short story that happened to me several years ago when I was a junior in high school. All of my friends got to travel to Myrtle Beach with the baseball team for spring break, but since I didn't play baseball, I was stuck at home. My one friend, Dave, was home too since we were the skaters of the friend group. We spent most nights of the break hanging out together and not doing really much, except for one night when we stayed at Dave's house. He literally lives in the middle of the woods. The closest neighborhood isn't that far away, but because of where his house is located, it truly feels like the middle of nowhere. Toward the end of the break, we snuck out of the house to see a girl who lived near him. Since she and a few other girls from school were still in town, we figured that we would hang out with them. And like I said, it wasn't far, just sort of an unnerving walk because there aren't very many lights and most of the walk is in the seclusion of trees and rocks. We had an awesome time hanging out with them. I liked this girl at the time, so it was great to be able to spend so much time with her. When we were walking back to the house that night, Dave noticed some random guy following us, but I didn't think anything of it. He was freaked out, and I told him to relax. The guy was following us closely, but not close enough for us to actually panic. When we made it back to his house, I watched the guy continuing walking up the street, and he never seemed to look back. I just looked at my buddy and told him that he was freaking out for no reason. The next night, we hung out again, and his parents were going out of town for the weekend, so he was going to have the house to himself. Since he was embarrassed by his house, he didn't want to have anyone over. Trust me when I say, I pushed hard for the girls to stay over, but I lost the argument. I told the girls that we couldn't hang out there, so instead, Dave and I walked to her house again. This time, we spent a considerable amount of time there. We didn't walk home until after about 3 in the morning. Dave was relieved on the way home that we didn't have anybody following us this time. I helped him close up the house, and we got comfortable in the living room before passing out on the couches. At this point in the night, I was having one of the best nights of my life. I actually kissed the girl that I liked, and I legitimately felt invincible. Not long after lying down, we heard a knock on the door, and we both froze. "What the hell was that?" Dave exclaimed. Then the knock came again. It was a low and rhythmic knocking. Each bang on the wood made my hair stand up, and I slowly got up and, standing a few feet from the door, I shouted, "Who is it?" There was no response right away. And then a young female voice shouted from the other side,
"Hey, I was wondering, can I please hide inside?"
I didn't say anything right away. The absurd nature of the statement and the calm tone of her voice left me speechless. Before I said anything, she spoke again.
"It's going to be too late if you don't let me in. Can I please hide inside your house?"
When I said that I was speechless, I mean, I was absolutely at a loss for words. I had a million things flying through my head, and I just didn't know what to do. My instincts told me that it was the girls playing a joke on us, but I didn't recognize that voice. I decided not to answer, and neither did Dave, and we just sat in silence. And then I noticed the doorknob starting to jiggle back and forth, first slowly, and then more aggressively. And then, the calm voice instantly became more sinister when she said,
"Open the damn door now!"
I finally was able to shout,
"Go away! I'm gonna call the police!"
There were no sounds for a few seconds. This woman spoke again. She started in a soft tone, and in the middle of the sentence, I could hear this sinister tone coming out, and she says,
"Hun, if you don't open the door right now, I'm going to lose my mind."
Dave finally jumped up from the couch and shouted for her to go away. And then a second voice could be heard from behind the door. It was a deep voice from a man, and he said,
"Good call, bud. Very, very good call."
Right after he said that, I thought I could hear what sounded like footsteps walking away. So I looked out of the window and saw two people walking down the street. One of them looked suspiciously like the person from the previous night. It just seemed very similar in stature. We were terrified and stayed awake for the rest of the night. Since his parents weren't home, we didn't call the police, even though obviously we should have. Dave was scared that his parents would get mad if the police showed up and they weren't home. On Sunday morning, when his parents came home, Dave told them what had happened, and they instantly called the police, calling us stupid, which we were. Better late than never, I guess. And since several hours had passed since the woman had been at the door, the police were honest with Dave's parents and told them that they would probably never catch these two people, but that they would be on the lookout for similar incidents. I have no idea what those two wanted or who they even were. I don't even like being outside at night anymore. That night really messed me up for a long time, and I'm still trying to recover from the mental nightmare I endured.
I'm a 20-year-old male. I live in a small, quiet town in the state of Ohio. One day I decided that I wanted to go camping in the woods because I'm an outdoors type of person, and I could really use the fresh air. My girlfriend Tiffany wasn't too thrilled at the idea, so I went alone. Fast forward to a day later, and I had made it to the woods and found a really nice clearing in the shape of a circle that was surrounded by trees. It seemed like the perfect place to set up my camp. As I was setting up my tent, I thought that I heard footsteps off in the distance. I shrugged my shoulders, thinking it was just another camper nearby, and I went back to setting up my tent. There's a lake not too far from where my camp was, so I went over to the lake with my fishing pole, and I started fishing. After I was done, I began walking back to my camp, and that's when I noticed something that I didn't notice before. There was a poster of a missing girl. She had blonde curly hair, blue eyes, and she had a huge smile on her face. The poster read, "Have you seen this girl?" After reading the poster, I had an uneasy feeling in my stomach. I put my hand on my stomach and began walking back to my camp. A few hours later, the sun began to set, and I'd started making my campfire now. While making the fire, I'd started thinking about the poster of the missing girl that I saw earlier. I could only imagine how her family's feeling right now, I said to myself. It was officially nighttime at this point, and I sat in front of the fire roasting marshmallows and hot dogs, like a typical camper. As I finished up eating my food, I decided it was time to go to sleep, so I put out the fire, entered my tent, and then crawled into my sleeping bag. I would say a few hours went by, when I suddenly woke up from hearing footsteps nearby. "I wonder who that is," I thought to myself. I pretended like I was still asleep as the footsteps walked past the tent. But then I heard another sound. It was the sound of something brushing up against the tent. I opened my eyes and I turned my head to where I thought the sound was coming from. Well, I then saw the most terrifying thing that I'd ever seen. It was a silhouette of a man holding an object with a long handle. I quietly moved my head closer and I looked at the object's handle. I wanted to find out what he was holding. It was an axe. I began to quiver in fear as I'd seen the silhouette outside walking around my tent. What was going to happen to me? I thought to myself. After a few minutes of circling the tent, the silhouette finally walked away. I waited for what seemed like an eternity before I could gather all the courage to get out of that tent and run. I carefully zipped open the tent and I began to make a break for it. I ran for about 5 minutes straight. I then heard a growl from behind me. I turned around slowly and my eyes widened. Standing 20 feet away from me was a very deranged looking man. He was wearing all black, including a black leather jacket, biker boots, and shiny silver buckles. The most disturbing part was that he had cuts all over his face. He then gave me a stomach-turning smile, showing off his set of nasty yellow teeth, and he began walking toward me with his axe. That's when I turned back around and took off, all the while I can hear the man chasing after me. I ran for about 10 minutes until I finally saw my car parked out in the distance. I ran straight to my car, unlocked my car door, got inside, and then turned on the car and drove off. As I was driving, I was looking in the rearview mirror, and I'd seen the man once again. He was just standing in the middle of the road, smiling directly at me. I'm now back home with my girlfriend, and I've never told her about the encounter, but as I'm writing this, I can still hear those sounds of the growls and laughter right outside my window. I can't get it out of my head. I know that it's all just in my head, but I just can't forget it. That was the scariest thing that ever happened to me. This is gonna be a long one, so I apologize in advance, but the background details are necessary for this story. I'm a 20-year-old female. I was recently in Africa on vacation with my family, and we had stayed 2 nights at a desert camp in the Sahara. The first night, my sister and I were talking and hanging out with these guys who worked there, who were probably all around the ages of 20 to 35. It seemed like they were just very friendly and harmless. I noticed at the campfire that night that one of the guys started paying more attention to me specifically, and I felt a little uncomfortable, but I figured it was just a language barrier or something. So out in the desert, you can see the stars really well, and even the Milky Way on clear nights, but you have to wait for the moon to go down, which is around 2 a.m. I guess it's a normal thing for the guys to come around to the tents, which are luxury tents, by the way. They're furnished with beds, lights, a toilet and shower, as well as a lock on the doors. So not your typical camping. They knock on the door to see if you're awake and if you want to come out to look at the stars. My sister and I were sharing a tent, my parents in a separate one across the walkway. The first night around midnight, I had told my sister that I was way too tired to go out because I was falling asleep. So she left to look at the stars without me. And I didn't lock the door because I didn't want her to get locked out if I fell asleep. Well, fast forward about an hour, and I'm on my side asleep, when I suddenly wake up to then see a head peeking in from the tent door. I thought it was my sister, so I then groggily asked her, "Hey, what are you doing?" Because it was just really weird the way she was standing there. I start to wake up more, and I realize it's this guy from the campfire's head. and he's peeking in my room while I'm asleep. Now, it could have just been a simple misunderstanding, but I felt totally violated with my privacy, especially because, you know, we're on their territory in the middle of the desert. Like, I'm not kidding, we had to take a 30-minute truck ride into the dunes. I was in a fight or flight at that moment. He literally woke me up with a panic attack, and I started totally freaking out. So I went to the door and I told him I was tired. He kept trying to get me to come out to the dunes with a blanket. Classic male move. But I just kept saying that I didn't feel good and I was really tired, which was true. At this moment, I didn't know where my sister was. I don't know where my family is. And all I know is this man standing in front of me, literally just watching me sleep. I also don't know how long he was there for. It could have been a literal second, or it could have been 2 minutes. But either way, I was high-key horrified by this. I told him no yet again, and that I'd look at the stars tomorrow. He told me he wouldn't be at the camp the next night, and that's why he wanted to go out tonight. But I wouldn't budge. Once he finally realized that I wasn't going to come outside, he asked me if he could have my number, and I told him no, I have a boyfriend. I don't, but it seemed the only way this man would respect my disinterest by knowing I was with another man. Well, after I said that, he asked me for my first name. I ended up giving it to him because I didn't really think it would do much harm. I then said goodnight, and I locked the door this time. I then went to the bathroom, and I had really bad diarrhea. This isn't really important to the story. I just wanted to show that he scared the literal shit out of me. And while I was on the toilet, I heard him come back and start calling my name from outside the tent. But I just stayed quiet and didn't say anything. I finished in the bathroom and went back to bed, still trying to calm down from what had just happened because my heart was racing. And I still heard him calling my name. I laid in bed as still as I could, and I didn't say anything. I tried texting my dad, but he wasn't answering, and I didn't really feel comfortable leaving the tent. Finally, my sister came back, and my dad was with her. So I told them what just happened, and they were really confused. They thought it was weird, but the conversation didn't really go much further than that. The next day, I had brought it up at breakfast yet again. And my sister and dad basically told me that I was just being dramatic about it, and that I should really just stop talking about it already, because it wasn't that big of a deal. Literally, my mom was the only one who agreed that it wasn't okay at all. So it's now the second night, and my sister and I were both out under the stars talking to the guys and relaxing. Keep in mind though, it's very dark, and you can't see any of the faces. So I was having a normal conversation with this one guy. I couldn't see him that well, and all was going well. After a while, he asked if I remember him, and I'm like, well, no, I can't really see you. So he tells me to shine a light on him, and so I do. And wouldn't you know, it's the same motherfucker from my tent. I especially wasn't expecting him to be the dude right in front of me, because he told me he wouldn't be there that night. Which leads me to believe that he had picked up a shift just to see me. But I can't be too sure about that. Who really knows why he was there? But surprisingly, he was fine that night, and he actually respected my boundaries this time. So I decided not to say anything to the other guys who ran the camp. I was honestly planning on doing so if he did anything remotely uncomfortable, but he didn't. So the next morning we left the area, and a few days later, I actually started getting message requests on Instagram. This motherfucker found me. I had accidentally tagged the whole desert. So you're telling me he found me based on my name and location, not even a specific location, an entire desert. And my name isn't even unique either. Anyway, he starts messaging me, and although I'm creeped out, I'm also thinking, well, he's harmless. I might as well see what he says. He says, and I quote, "You know, I'm really so happy to find your account. I was really looking for you, trying to find you for a long time." Which I found highly creepy to even say to someone. But again, it could have just been a cultural difference. But who knows? I didn't answer, and he messaged me again a few days later, asking me how I was. But yeah, I didn't answer. I'm really curious to know what everyone else thinks about this, and if I really was overreacting, or if you think my gut feeling was actually right. I mean, he seemed to be actually harmless in the end, but you never know.
To all those out there who live in areas near wide stretches of empty land like I do, I'm sure you've already been warned why it's dangerous to travel on back roads at night. Growing up in Seattle, one of the biggest cities on the West Coast, I never really needed to worry about the dangers of driving in the middle of nowhere, until I committed to a college in Eastern Washington. For those of you who have never been there, the eastern side of Washington is very different from the western side. Some may even think that they accidentally took a wrong turn into a different state. Primarily used as farmland, Eastern Washington is almost completely absent from all the elements that give the other side its famous reputation. Instead, this side is mostly just rolling fields of wheat and dried grass that stretch into the distance with a few tumbleweeds and windmills here and there. Driving through this area while the sun is still out is actually quite pleasant on a nice day. The big sky above and nothing but miles and miles of golden hills on each side of you. Driving through Eastern Washington at night was one of the most nerve-wracking experiences I ever had, and here's why. If you've ever had to drive down a dark country road at night, I'm sure that you've already been lectured by everybody and their mothers on the obvious dangers like drunk drivers, falling asleep at the wheel, and animals suddenly running across the road. In my particular area, we have a lot of issues with head-on collisions, mainly in part of antsy students passing cars recklessly in an effort to get home faster. In addition to these more sensible hazards to be aware of, there's also a lot of superstitions like ghosts and murdering hitchhikers that wait on the side of the road at odd hours of the night, begging for a ride. To top it all off, probably the most dangerous part of driving on these back roads at night is the fact that there is no cell service throughout a massive part of the area. So basically, if anything happens to you out here, you're screwed, because you'll have no way of contacting anyone for help. There is no civilization around for who knows how many miles, and the chances of another car coming by anytime soon is pretty slim. With these dangers in mind, it's safe to say that the story I have for you is about an occurrence that I hope never needs to be warned of again. Now let me begin by saying that the creepiest thing about driving through these empty farmlands at night is by far the lack of light. There is no need for any street lights in the middle of nowhere, and no towns or cities anywhere nearby. The only light besides your own headlights is that of the stars and moon above. It's a surreal experience looking out your window and seeing only the darkness beyond the railing on the side of the road. Mostly because you have no idea what could be out there. And that's why you should be scared of driving on country roads at night. One night, my boyfriend and I were driving home from my cabin in Eastern Washington, when I noticed a car pulled over on the side of the road. When we passed the car, I noticed that it was completely empty, and wondered where the people inside could have gone, considering there was nothing even remotely in walking distance from where we were. I figured that they had run out of gas and had to hitch a ride to the nearest town. My theory of where they had gone prompted my boyfriend to tell me a story that I will never forget. In the late 90s and early 2000s, Washington State had a bit of a cult problem. This wasn't the first time I was hearing of this, considering the fact that one of the church camps I went to when I was younger was oddly enough built on the grounds of a disbanded satanic cult. Who made that decision? Anyways, most of these cults resided over in the east side, because of how far it was away from everything and everybody, and they wanted to isolate themselves. These cults could basically do whatever they wanted, and fly completely under the radar due to the fact that there was nobody around to stop them, because a lot of the time nobody even knew they were out there. And that's why they were able to get away with what they did. My boyfriend told me that one summer morning, a police station in one of the very few tiny towns amongst the farmlands received a call reporting a missing person. The caller claimed that her husband had not returned from his shift at the paper mill the night before, and she was worried that he had gotten into an accident because he hadn't answered any of her calls. Many of the residents in these small towns commuted to jobs way out in the country lands, because many of them were either farmers or workers at the local paper mill, so accidents at night were not uncommon. The station agreed to send out a patrol car to look for him. At one point along the road, the officer noticed that one of the speed limit signs had disappeared, and noted that it may have been the cause of the missing person's presumed accident. Local kids must have been bored, but what else did they have to do out there? The man's car was found pulled off to the side of the road, about halfway through his commute, without a single scratch on it. The man was nowhere to be found, but his car was unlocked, and his wallet and cell phone lie in plain view on the passenger seat. Something definitely did not seem right. After weeks of investigation, the man was still missing, and nobody had any idea where he had gone. For several days, the police station anxiously waited for any news that could solve the mystery behind the disappearance. But because of the usually uneventful nature of the area, the only report called in was that of another missing speed limit sign. A few days later, another call came in. There was another missing person report, almost identical to the one before. Somebody hadn't returned home from their shift the night before. The police sent out a patrol car once again, and sure enough, there it was. An untouched, abandoned car on the side of the road, with the missing person's belongings clearly left behind. But there was something different this time. Faint scratch marks could be seen on the driver's seat, that trailed onto the floor and out the door. It appeared that somebody had been dragged from their car. This realization of a possible assault or abduction raised great alarm, and an announcement was made to all local residents to lock their doors on their drives back home at night and be extremely cautious of anybody who may try and approach their car. One night around 2 a.m., the station received a call that would answer their disturbing question of where these people had disappeared to. A couple had been traveling on the road where the people had gone missing, and had just narrowly escaped the fate of those before them. They had fortunately heard the announcement a week before, and made sure their doors were locked, and kept an eye out for anything out of the ordinary. Apparently, a few minutes after they had entered an area void of any cell service, they noticed a single ray of light that appeared to be floating directly in the middle of the road, just a ways down the route. Confused as to what it might be, the couple slowed down cautiously. As they neared the source of light, they saw something that gives them nightmares to this day. Standing in the middle of the road was a chain of people linked together arm in arm, creating a barrier on the street. There was a man in the middle that held a flashlight in his teeth. The car came to a complete stop. There was no way to go forward. Then, what seemed to be a split second after they had stopped their car, out of the complete and utter darkness on each side of the road, two people leapt over the railing and ran towards the car and tried to rip the doors open. The human chain had only been a distraction. Thankfully, their doors were locked, and the husband frantically switched their car into reverse and slammed the gas pedal. They had gotten away and immediately called the station once they regained service. When the police asked if they had seen where they had gone as they drove away, they simply answered with, "Back into the darkness, beyond the road." An investigation occurred, but the people in the road were never found. To this day, nobody knows who those people were, or where they came from. They eventually did find the bodies of the missing people. Both victims were found bound to what appeared to be a stolen speed limit sign. Their bodies were severely burned. What could be the reasoning behind ripping people from their cars at odd hours of the night and burning them alive out in the middle of nowhere? Without any explanation, the police chalked it up to cult activity. But how could it be possible that there was no trace of these people anywhere? It was almost as if they had vanished into thin air. What's more disturbing is the fact that they could still be out there. All I can tell you is to think twice next time you're driving down a dark country road at night and mindlessly staring into that deep darkness just beyond the railing. You never know who could be staring back.